is to classify semisimple Lie algebra yesterday. Well, apparently I left a very big cliffhanger, and everybody comes to ask me, so now we know SU2, so what? We still have all the rest of Lie algebra to study. And, well, the idea is that we'll start to demonstrate that SU2, okay, all I should try my best to write the squished down version. It's everywhere. We'll always find an SU2 somehow. After we find this SU2, we'll try to use what we learned yesterday, that SU2 has spin presentations. And in the middle is what I call the miracle happens. And then at last you realize that that miracle enable you to figure out the classification. Okay. So let's start with a reminder that the last time we talked about says that if we are in the adjoint representation, then the generator is a matrix, has a matrix representation, then it can act on the generators and give us some commutator of the vector. So we're going to rely on using this, just consider this as a matrix, as a vector, back and forth a lot today. And when I said that it's easy to prove when we make them all orthonormal, I'm just being lazy. Actually, George, I proved for as long, like you are always able to do this. So if it's proportional to third AB, then this falls through as well. So this was in a box. I'll put it in a box again and come back to this box later. But let's remember our general recipe. Instead of just list all the spin representation for you, I'll send you a mathematical demonstration and you say spin equals some half integer and it immediately outputs you 3 n by n matrix says, look, this is the n-dimensional representation of SU2 algebra. We actually go through quite a bit of trouble in trying to say, how do we generalize? So remember our general recipe says that we'll pick the Catan subalgebra, which is formed by a bunch of mutual commuting Hermitian generators. I think I'm not emphasizing the Hermitian part enough. So we're picking a bunch of mutually commuting Hermitian operators out of these generators. So it's a set, and I runs from 1 to R. And we call our rank. And in today's tutorial, you will have the hands-on experience of given 8 generators and how to pick 2 of them that is mutually commuting. And if you are interested, you can use Mathematica to demonstrate they are actually the maximum number of generators. So indeed, the rank is 2. So today, please bring your laptop to use Mathematica. It's recommended. You can do it by hand. And you are slightly less warned than yesterday. Okay. So you pick the Catan subalgebra, and you have this group, this list of mutually commuting Hermitian operators, so they can be simultaneous diagonalized and has real eigenvalue, can observe it, and all sorts of wonderful things happen. Sometimes I call it a vector. Be clear that it's going to be a vector. You can even draw these vectors on the plane. Okay, so that's our step one. Pick this. And step two, we claim that we can organize the rest of the generator such that they are eigengenerator of these HIs in this following sense, that we have something like E alpha, it'll give me alpha I, E alpha back. So I'll restrict myself to discussing roots at this particular big, well, if we want to interpret it as an eigenvector, it's much easier if we consider the adjoint representation, because it's really, you can write it in terms of the eigenvector equation in linear algebra. Okay? So we say we organize all the other generators, find their linear combinations such that they are eigenvectors of HI, and alpha I is just the eigenvalue. And then they have a name. Normally they're called a weight. They're all called weights. But if you are in adjoint, then you are special somehow. You are called roots. I also call them the roots of the miracle, and we'll come back to the miracle later. Okay, so then, so suppose I want to do it. What would happen? Well, let's just say first I found one of such generator. If I pick some subalgebra, I'm left with many generator. It's very possible that the linear combination of the rest will give me at least one of them that is eigenvector. It's a vector space, so you can use your technique to find the eigenvector. So the first one definitely exists. Then you wonder the following question. What happens to, say, this guy? If that guy exists, what about the adjoint of E alpha? So to figure that out, we can take the adjoint of this definition, assuming this guy without the dagger is a vector, I'm definitely free to take the adjoint of that equation. Alpha I is a real because they are H's a Hermitian. Okay. Then remember this, that what happens to adjoint is that once you adjoint, you switch the commutator. So HI is Hermitian, so adjoint disappeared, but this is a commutator. When you adjoin, the order gets switched. So I still like to write as HI acting on the adjoint, so I pick up a minus sign. And in the other words, we realize that HI acting on the adjoint will give us minus alpha I. Right? That's just the adjoint. That's just commutator. Get a minus sign. And this must be also equal. And you realize the adjoint of this generator we found is also an eigenvector, and it comes precisely with completely opposite eigenvalues. Question.
Why were the algebra matrices Hermitian? Why were the H's
Hermitian?
You have a bunch of generators. Mm-hmm. You make them You are looking for the, you construct them to be formation in the first place. You can always do that. Even if you start with a bunch of generators and not Hermitian, you can always find some combination such that you make them Hermitian. Also, because like in the fine, in semi-simple Lie algebra, in the compact semi-simple Lie algebra, you always have finite representation. Your adjoint is unitary, and the unitary representation, the generators are always Hermitian. Okay, question. Because the eigenvalue of a Hermitian matrix.
But that's only adjoint representation.
Yeah, yeah. We will stay with adjoint representation. So from now on, we'll remain our discussion. Sorry, we'll start only consider when alpha are roots. You will deal with the non-roots problem in the tutorial. Okay. Let's stick with the fact that we just focus on adjoint representation and see how much we can get out of it. The first thing we get out says, oh, you have a bunch of other generators. I do some linear transformation. It's a guarantee I'm going to find one eigenvector. And the lucky thing is, as soon as you find one eigenvector, its adjoint, its dagger, is always also an eigenvector, which completely opposite roots, but that's how we define our eigenvector. If the eigenvalue is minus alpha, then we call it E minus alpha. So this is true. Right? This should sound vaguely familiar. This somehow reminds me that J minus is J plus dagger. Sort of. Okay, well, the idea is that whenever we do commutator relationship, we should try to figure out all the commutator relationship. So of course, you continue to wonder, now that I have E alpha, E minus alpha, what's this commutator is gonna equal? Right? You start with H, and then you find an E alpha, and you realize E alpha dagger is nothing but something has completely opposite eigenvalue. And then you wonder, okay, this thing looks J plus, J minus. So let's calculate this commutator as it would look like. So I'll try to calculate this by doing the following thing. It's kind of arbitrary, but the only thing I know is about these HIs, so I decided to use this HI somehow, for example, in terms of the Jacobi identity. So now I have to start a cycle, and I'll probably make a mistake. Just please let me know. H E alpha. E minus alpha. So this is just what a Jacobian identity says. If you have a commutator, and then if you rotate these three things, this would always work. Right? But the reason we do this is as soon as you get this HI into the commutator somehow, well, we know what's this. This is given by, well, this. The other one is given by this. So this must be alpha I E minus alpha. So the other way is minus alpha I, but this must be alpha I. And this is the definition of eigenvalues. It's alpha I E alpha. Now you realize, cool, this thing cancels. This is alpha. E minus alpha, E alpha, this is E alpha, E minus alpha come with the same coefficient, so this thing just disappeared. You happily cross them all out. And now we claim that since that happens, E alpha and E minus alpha, this thing, commute with HI. What conclusion can you draw from that? Very good. It must be in the Cartan separator because we, at first we guarantee says it has to be the maximum set. Anything outside cannot be commuting, otherwise it's already absorbed in the subalgebra. So the only thing that it can be is some combination beta I HI. It's some linear combination of something that is already in the Cartan subalgebra. That's the only way it's going to commute. That's why at first we have to pick the maximum one. Otherwise, this is not going to fall through this argument. Okay. Okay, there is some further step using the definition of an inner product, and you can, George, I show that it's actually okay if you don't have orthonormal as long as your proportion to delta AB. And you can actually show that you can, this thing, the beta i's are actually equal alpha i's. So this is true. Well, to make, sort of makes sense. We all, otherwise, where did this beta I come from, right? The only parameter we have so far is the alpha i's. Yes?
Which of the alphas is meant to be negative on that one?
But which? Oh, very good point. Thank you. Please catch me. I'll have many typos. And at some point, I'll be punished. So if you catch me earlier, I'll be less punished. Okay, very good. So let's collect what we have so far. We have that HI, or if I want to be fancy, I'll write everything together. Says this guy give me alpha, E alpha. And then E minus alpha will, of course, give me minus alpha. Okay. Well, this is kind of dumb. I can just write them together. So it's plus minus here. Okay. And then, but further, we discover the E alpha and the E minus alpha equals alpha dot H. Let me remind you, what did we do in class for the whole class? For the whole class, we studied the following thing. J3 plus minus J plus minus equals plus minus J plus minus. Then we say J plus J minus give you back J3. So there must be a way. Somehow we make them look exactly the same. By rescaling, I can always say that let me pick E plus equals to some number times this E alpha guy, and pick E3 equals to some number times this alpha dot H thing, such that if I make this transformation, this rescaling, we will get exactly this algebra with E plus E minus E3. This is definitely possible. Right? I can just substitute this in there, and this in there, and this in there, and demand this is true. And then we do the same thing here. Right? And it's possible if I just do some rescale. Okay. And turn out, the rescaling coefficient, no one isn't that surprised. It's some length of alpha square and stuff like that. So we claim if we have had choose E3 equals 1 over length of alpha square times alpha dot H, it will just all work out. Now we're happy. We have deep E plus, E minus, and E3. And we found SU2. And this process is very general. It means give me a Lie algebra. I'll always manage to build a subly algebra that is SU2 for you. It's everywhere. Okay? Everyone following? Okay. Since it's SU2, then we can do a lot of cute things, right? Suppose, well, see, now I have some Catan subalgebra, and the idea is like two generators. I still have many generators. We do the same thing. We find a linear combination. So assumably, one of those linear combination would be very nice, such that it's also the eigenvector with beta as the eigenvector. You just do the same thing again, and you get another eigenvector. Not completely crazy. Okay, but then you wonder, what is this state? What's the eigenvalue under this shiny J3, our J3, really, the spin? You can even ask the question, what's the spin of the state? And if you want to know the spin, you act on the state, right? Okay, I start to use these two notations interchangeably because I claim that we're going to study adjoint representation really hard. Okay, and then that's just a number. And then f is also a number, dot h, but e beta is a eigenvector of h, so you get beta. And then you get this guy back. Right? So we claim that whenever you find a state that is the eigenvector of this awesome sub-Catan generators, it definitely is an eigenstate of E3, but E3 is just fancy combination of these Catan generators, and it has the following eigenvalue, right? So the first thing we start is let's find a state M. So this is our state M yesterday. The next step, of course, is study what happens if I add E plus on it. Okay, so, well, what we actually study is what's the eigenvalue of the status after I add a E plus on it. But since the overall factor is going to change my eigenvalue, I'll just directly add E alpha on it. Right? Because we're trying to say E alpha is proportional to our E plus. E plus look like a J plus. So let's see what happens if we act our J plus on our state M. That's what we also see yesterday. J plus at on M, you get something that has M plus 1 as the eigenvalue, and hence earning the name of raising operator. So let's try to say this. And then this, well, we can do the same trick because we know that we know the commutator relationship. Okay, sorry, I'll change it back to BE plus because E plus, the commutator relationship, I know even better. And I know, by definition, this guy gave me E plus. Well, by construction, I constructed it to look exactly like the SU2 here. The only thing is you change J into E, come on, it's a naming system. Okay, so this is just the commutator, and this says pick up an eigenvalue, but I already figured out the eigenvalue is alpha dot beta, d divided by alpha squared. So what we have is that you have 1 plus alpha dot beta over alpha squared, and then that's the state you get after acting our raising operator. So indeed, our raising operator is doing exactly what it is supposed to do. A add a 1 to whatever we get. This is exactly what happened. Yesterday you have m, you add the raising operator, you get m plus 1. This time you have a slightly more confusing eigenvalue, but it's okay, it's a dot product divided by some length. And then you also raise by 1. I'll just write it in another way so that I can label my state nicely. Oh, I just write 1 as alpha squared over alpha squared. And then you can add them together. So that's alpha dot beta plus alpha. That there's a plus. Sorry. Okay, let me rewrite this part. All right. Uh-oh. I'll fix that later. Okay. I hope in the next 45 minutes I don't trip over it. That'd be very interesting. Okay. See that's very important to realize. Wherever I tripped, this is very important to realize. It is that if you have a state beta, and then if you add an E plus, you will get some status of alpha plus beta. It's just a notation. Since this part they all look the same, I'm just using whatever is in that parenthesis to denote my state, so I can write a few less things. And then you can add another E plus, and da la da la da. And you conclude, hey, this is SU2. I know SU2 is going to terminate somewhere, and then you will reach 0. So from the fact that this is an SU2, first I realize that this guy must be a half integer because it's the eigenvalue of SU2 subalgebra. So 2 times this guy must be an integer. That's what we learn from SU2s. And then now we realize we can use our raising operator again, again, again. And then after p times, it'll reach some highest weight state. Let's say 2j, because j is the half integer, right? At some point, you will terminate because you are an SU2. And a similar argument, without trying to prove it, that I'll claim if I add a bunch of E minus, I must be able to reverse this process. And dale, 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 somewhere here hits another 0. So after minus Q, and you get something like a minus 2J. Otherwise, I have to use 2p. So it's actually you start with the state. After integer step, you will hit the highest weight. You start with the same state. Subtracting integer step, you will hit to the minus j. Okay, sorry. And now what I can do is add these 2 formula together. We get this thing called the master formula, because we want to draw some conclusion has nothing to do with which exact representation we're in. We are not interested in what's J. We want to draw some general conclusion. That's normally the case if you want to classify things. And now I look at this formula. Very, very important. It says P is number of steps, must be integer. Q must also be integer. So this guy is an integer. But wait, I know that guy is an integer. This doesn't enable us to learn much. But, fun fact. See, I was being biased. I choose Alpha to be the guys, to be the important guys to build my SU2 sub algebra, and choosing Beta just be some other generator. And that's very biased. I could have done the other way. I could have done chosen the Beta to be the important guys and build my sub as SU2 out of, and consider Alpha as this other generators. Right? So without me writing everything I wrote on these two boards again, I think it's convincing enough that I could just switch Alpha and Beta. If I call all the Alpha Betas and call all the Beta Alphas, this should work. And of course, you know, if you do that, then you have no idea how many steps is P, how many steps is Q, so I use some other integer. So I don't need to write this two boards again and trick myself again to help you. Okay, so yes, then we do the same thing, integer, integer, integer. Okay, still no information gained. So how do we gain information? We gain information by simply moving the P and the Qs on one side because we're not interested in them. And now we decide to multiply these two formulas. So I have formula one, formula two, and they are exactly the same formula. I'm just doing things unbiasedly. Everybody gets the chance to be the important SU2 subalgebra. That's the only thing that has happened. So if I multiply this, I get a 4 alpha dot beta divided by alpha squared beta squared equals Q minus P times Q minus P prime. So why is this very remarkable? I have squares. Thank you. Now it's remarkable. Before it's just wrong. Thank you. Let's put this remarkable thing in the box. Well, it's a big box. Normally you want remarkable things in a small box. It's like SUN has n squared minus 1 generator. That's quite a big box. Okay, but help me out here. What is this? I have two vectors and dot them together and divide it by their lengths.
Cosine. Cosine.
Very good. That's just the cosine of the angle. Okay, let's come back here. It says that thing is very familiar. That thing is what we learned a long time ago, says that's cosine, the angle between alpha and beta and the square. And now it's remarkable, because the right-hand side is still an integer. Nice thing about a cosine, it's bounded. The furthest we can ever reach by using cosine square is 1. This thing only take values between 0 to 1. But now we put a really, really strong constraint. Did we lose anybody? No? Very good. OK. Before cosine this angle, without any pre-knowledge about SU2s, you would think they can form any angle they wish. It will have a continuous spectrum of cosine function and has this cute shape. But no, they say, if you are the roots in the some Lie algebra, then the roots can only form certain angles. Since this is not a very long list, we can even exhaust them. So first, let's make a list. Says if this integer is 0, then we get 4 cosine theta square is 0, cosine theta is 0. If you still remember all these special angles from even longer time ago, then you would know this is 90 degrees. Right? And then integer 1, we get 4 cosine theta square equals 1. Cosine theta is plus minus 1/2. And if I restrict my interest in 0 to 180 degrees, so if I have an angle, normally if described within pi, that's enough. So then, wait, what's how much the angle? Okay, 60 degrees or 120. Okay, 2. I even find some task I can do without mathematics. This is good. Cosine theta is plus minus 1 over square root 2. So this is 45 degrees or 135 degrees. And you have 3. Then you have 30 degrees or 150 degrees. And then 4, you have 0 or 180 degrees. OK, 0 degrees is not very interesting. They're not forming any angle. And the 180 degrees says the opposite. That's the pair we found. E alpha and E minus alpha is the 180 degrees. So this line, less interesting. OK, so we conclude. If we have a Lie algebra, then all the roots can only form these angles. So they are all like very rigid. So now is the time that we go back to drawing. Remember, we started our class with drawing a bunch of things. And then you wonder, can I visual Lie group as well? I don't know, but we can visual the roots of the Lie algebra. Close enough. OK, so first, let's draw the case that forming 90 degrees. OK, that's very not very interesting. So first, let's draw a big circle and put the two dots there. Looks like a piggy nose. But that's actually our H1, H2. Remember, we're rank 2. So let's consider rank 2, because we claim if we study r equals 1, r equals 2, r equals 3, then everything else will follow. And r equals 1, we have SU2. So next step would be r equals 2. So here is the two. They should be on top of each other. OK, because the h are mutually commuting, they definitely have 0 eigenvalue under themselves. And now I can just say pick alpha and minus alpha. Since this is the first pair I pick, I can always put on x-axis. If I put it somewhere else, I'll say that guy is the x-axis. So now, the first choice suggests that it should form 90-degree angle. Well, that's the y-axis. So I get a beta over here, and I get a minus beta over here. And we're done. If they say all roots will form 90-degree angle, that's all I can draw. And this thing you find, hey, I found the other SU2. See, there's SU2 over here on the x-axis. There's SU2 on the y-axis. And this, if they are orthogonal, as you learned about a lot of orthogonal things recently, and this should it be the direct product of SU2 and SU2? Because you have S2, SU2. And they have nothing to do with each other whatsoever. If you look at this guy doesn't transform it under this SU2. This is a singlet. So if you are in one of the SU2, you are singly under the other guy, so then you're not talking. So this is the direct product. And if you're interested enough to find all the generator of SO4, and then you'll find that their roots happens to look like this. And this is why you claim that the Lie algebra of SU2, direct product SU2, is nothing but SO4. Okay, since this example is less interesting because but even before I do any classification, I do anything, I always know how to do direct products, so this does not interest me. So then we move to the next angle. Since the next angle is 60 degree or 120 degree, so it's definitely not orthogonal, will guarantee to yield something that is interesting. And again, yes? No? Okay. Did we lose anything? Lose anybody? 2D geometry. Drawing vectors in two dimensions. Okay, again. Okay, I'll start the same way. I have alpha and minus alpha. And then they say that if I have other roots, if I choose choice one, it should be forming 60 or 120 degree of angles. So I should try my best to draw an equilateral triangle here. So for example, this guy could be beta. And then this guy. My best is not good enough. Should be minus beta. And then, okay. In Georgia's book, there is very serious argument why that this thing is not a Lie algebra. But remember, we study symmetry of things. This just do not look symmetric to me. I would be very happy if I can add another pair. Then they were all forming happily 60 degrees, and they look, what we obtain is something called a hexagon. Now it looks very symmetric, everything forming 60 degrees, so agree with this master formula, and I have a bunch of dots everywhere. This is the main subalgebra SU2, but as we claimed, we can totally choose this guy to be the main SU2, then we can also choose this guy to be the SU2, and we can, that's choices, but remember, you are rank 2, so only 2 of them are independent. And then you can draw some circles, dots, and link them together, draw a beautiful hexagon. And this is what we're going to study this afternoon in tutorial. This is known as SU3. Well, one reason is it's known as SU3. You can count. I have 6 dots on the outside, 2 dots in the inside, so I together have 8 dots. Then if you notice the fun fact that the 8 happen to be 3 squared minus 1, then you might suspect this thing might have something to do with SU3. And in the afternoon, you will be handed 8 Gell-Mann matrices and actually find the roots and draw a much better diagram than this guy. But this is the root system of SU3. So you're like, I'm not quite satisfied with your argument of because it doesn't look pretty, I'll draw some more dots on it argument. So if you're not satisfied, Georgia has an argument says all roots come from simple roots. So of course, you ask, what kind of roots are simple? There are so many roots. We have 6 non-zero roots, which are simple. Well, that actually kind of depends on choice. But first, we should define what is a positive root. A positive root There are many definitions. For example, the one Jada gave says you just keep looking the component. You look at the first component of the root. If it's positive, then you say it's positive. If it's negative, you say it's negative. And if you're done, you say, hey, my first entry is zero. Okay, you look at the next entry. You just go continue this process. You can separate all the positive roots from negative roots. But there is a more rigorous way to say is that you draw a R minus one plane that pass through origin. And then you call everything on one side is positive, the other side is negative.
Isn't that the same? Because you just project the vectors, look at the first component?
Yeah, yeah.
So, okay.
But then I can draw the plane anywhere. For example, if you're in 2D, you draw a one plane, you can draw this way. You can draw this plane any direction you want. But yes, you're right. There's two definitions of cross equivalent. It's just this one sound more rigorous and fancy. And you can also do it on your diagrams. Since we draw some diagrams, we can use them. And now we can claim the guy above the lines are positive roots. So these guys are positive roots. Now further, we claim that simple roots are roots such that other roots can be expressed by linear combination but we demand it has positive integer coefficient. So we have three positive roots and we can choose in the way that the one is the sum of the other. And since we all learned vector, how to add a vector together, so it's clear in that diagram that the beta is equals alpha plus gamma with positive integer coefficient. So we'll happily choose alpha and gamma to be our positive roots and use them to generate all the other positive roots. Then, you can prove, actually, that constraint applies to all roots. But if you are only consider simple roots, you can even put even stronger constraints as theta actually has to be bigger than pi over 2 and smaller than pi. Or just pi is not interesting. Theta is the angle between any two roots. So, for example, in this case, we'll choose this guy and this guy. Those are our simple roots. And in today's tutorial, you'll realize simple roots have their usage. You can use them to find our raising and a lowering operator. You can find the highest weight state. Highest weight state is defined to be the state that get annihilated with all the simple roots. And then you can build your lowering operator, bring your highest weight state down, and you can find the fundamental representation of SU3. Okay, so there's something I said wrong in tutorials today. Fundamental representation apparently exists for everybody, and it's related to this root, so you can define some co-roots. And fundamental representation is always defined for any Lie algebra, and you can generate all the other representation coming from it using Young tableaus. Okay, the tensor methods that we're not going to cover. Okay, so I guess now there's not much I can say about this diagram, so let's move on. To continue drawing. So now I'm gonna only looking at the angles that are bigger than angles that are bigger than 90 degrees. So the next angle will be 135. So again, you start with a plane. And then you have a pair of dots in the middle. You have alpha, you have minus alpha. And now, according to our new knowledge, let's draw a simple root such that it forms 135 degree, such like this. And then you can just add alpha and beta together to find all the rest. So first, if I add this together, I'll find this guy. And if I add this guy again, I'll find this guy. And then, of course, all their negative roots are also there. So then you get something like this. So let's count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Not good at counting, apparently. So now we have 10 generators. Fun fact again, 10 is equal to 5 times 4 divided by 2. So then you guess this is probably this Lie algebra root diagram for SO5. Okay. So, and then you can go on to draw the 30 degree diagram. And I'll not try to draw it on board because it's harder. Okay, so then we can notice the interesting things. For example, if I choose this guy to be my SU2 sub algebra, then you can find this is another triplet. And then if I choose some diagonal SU2 subalgebra, I found a doublet and a singlet. So if this is the SU2 subalgebra I choose, then remember the raising and the lowering operator, if we act on it, I just get to the vector sum. Remember from beta, if I act a raising operator, I get alpha plus beta. You act again, you get a 2 alpha plus beta. So these things, they are related by the raising and the lowering operator should form a representation. So in this case, you find a case that transform as a triplet. Because you're adding alpha to beta, you're just moving along this line. And then, but if you instead chose this root system as your main SU2, then you have to add alpha onto beta. So you can start here, and you continue adding beta, you get this guy. You find a doublet. And then you have a single. And so on and so forth. Okay, so that's almost done with R equals 2. There is this 30 degree. We can draw it in the tutorial. Because I just can't draw it on the board. I'm just bad at that. Okay, so now let's move on to rank 3. Well, then it would pose even harder problem for me to draw on the board. So let's see what Dinkins says. Dinkins has this cute system. First, you develop a system of rating things, and then somehow he solves everything. So his Dinkins system. And he also has his Dinkins coefficient system that you will use in the tutorial and find all the non-adjoint, the not adjoint representation. You can use his other system to find any representation you want. But Dinkins system says that I can represent orthogonal by drawing two dots that are not connected to each other. So these dots are the simple roots, and he says, if I draw two dots next to each other, has nothing connect, that's 90 degrees. So he happily says this is SO4. And then he says, well, what if you're connected by 120 degrees? So this is 90 degrees. 120 degrees, then you're drawing one line. And this is the SU3. And then if you're forming 135 degrees, then you draw two lines. And this is us, our SO5. And then he says, well, in this case, it's curious because one root is 1.414 times longer than the other roots. He says, if that happens, I just make it solid. So this is the short roots in his notation. Well, of course, for two of them, it's kind of pointless to draw them to one of them to be shorter. And then you're left with 150. And 150, he says that I'll draw three lines. And if you draw it in the tutorial, you will realize one of them is still shorter. And then this guy is the J2 somehow, G2. It's just a weird sub-Lie algebra. Yes, question?
What do you mean by one shorter?
Literally by the length. So say these are the two simple roots I choose. And this one is the other one. And this one is shorter than the other. So if they don't have any solid dots, that just means they are all equal ones. And then, okay, so then there is the case of moving to more than rank 2. So then, people just keep working on this, but now they have this dot system that they happily says, we can just draw in dots and say if they worked out. And then they get this classification. That's all the semi-simple Lie algebra. So this guy says, if you just keep drawing dots that they have 120 degree between each other, and also if they're disconnected, say the first dot and the third dot that is disconnected, they don't have lines between them, then they are orthogonal. So it's really pairwise 120 degree, these simple roots. If they're not next to each other, then they are orthogonal. And this thing is what we are familiar with, which is called the SUN Dinkins diagram, plus one. Because SU2 is rank one. SU3 is rank 2. Okay, so this is the A series. And then they look at this, the second version, the diagram that has one root longer than the other roots. Then they have root difference. And they realize that this guy can be generated in two ways. One of them is generate the longer roots, and you connect a bunch of longer roots on top of them. The other way is generated by the shorter roots. You connect a bunch of shorter roots on them. And this guy is the SO 2N plus 1 series. And this is some symplectic group we haven't talked about. But it basically says it's always matrices preserve some metric, and this guy has the interesting metric, the symplectic metric that David probably have mentioned. And this guy has all 120 degree, but it splits. And this thing is the SO2N. And then there is some exceptions. G2 is the only guy that ever utilized this 150 degree thing. Nobody else does it. And in rank 4, there is this F4 guy, and then there's E6, E7, E8. You can just ask Freddy, who said he has a friend that think E8 is the most fundamental Lie algebra. But by the fact that it has 248 generators, I somehow disagree. But it's nice. If you draw the E8 system of the subalgebra, anything you can think of is always some subalgebra of E8. So.
Sorry, yes. Notation with the dots in between, does it imply that they're not connected?
No, the dots just means continue doing what I had before, just drawing a line, drawing a dot, drawing a line. It's a chain of, the dots just imply that there can be any number of them you want.
Okay.
And all these dots always means the 120 degree version. And they all have, it's just a chain. Any of these dots means a chain. So that's the classification. And that's all we have. And of course, if you read Georgia, and you will see the proof for it as well. It's one of the most elegant proof mathematics has. Yes, question.
How do you get that bound on the angle pi by 2 pi?
This?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, this there is a proof that is, so for example, in this guy, if I choose alpha and beta, I'll actually not be able to generate this positive root. And then there is a general proof in Georgia's book says that if you want to choose simple roots such that all the other roots can be expressed with a positive coefficient, for example, gamma can be produced. So if you say, let me try to choose alpha and beta to be my simple roots, but then there is a problem because gamma is actually b subtract alpha. And then it's not the positive integer coefficient. So you can't choose alpha and beta as simple roots. You have to choose alpha and gamma.
But to begin with, you had beta and alpha over there, right? How did you get gamma at all?
Ah, very good. That's why I said that. I cheated and claim that if you only have alpha and beta, it doesn't look symmetric. But that's just the cheating way says that if I have two roots, I want to make this diagram symmetric and cute, and it look like this. And then the non-cheating way says, no, you actually should start with simple roots. And the simple roots are defined the following way, and you actually should start with an angle that is between pi over 2 and pi. And then the cute thing about simple roots is as long as you know, see in this diagram, if you know simple roots and alpha, the beta, all the other two positive roots can indeed be generated by just adding alphas to beta, add one alpha, add two alpha, and in Georgia there's a very systematic way of if given the following roots is simple roots, how can I generate all the rest of the roots? And hence produce a cute root system like this. Okay. More questions? Yes.
I still wonder how can we generate from alpha and beta. Alpha and gamma, suppose. I mean, like in this case, it's like you draw a diagram, but we start from the definition of like E alpha. So how can you claim that there's such a, if I give you E alpha and E beta, how can you claim that there's an E alpha plus beta?
So you say if I know that H acting on E alpha, give me alpha, E alpha, and if I also know H acting E beta is beta of this, how do I know this is also a root?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, but remember that we claim that E plus acting E alpha, and if you act J, the E3 on top of it again, you will get, and indeed I'll come back to trip on myself, get alpha dot alpha plus beta over alpha square, E plus, right? And then this, indeed, I will call this state the E alpha plus beta. And of course, sometimes you find this vanish, and that just means you add a further alpha on it, you get a zero. So for example, in this case, you could say, after I generate beta, can I add alpha again? And if you actually do this reading operator process, you will realize somehow that state is annihilated. Like this doesn't exist.
But why this one is, so in this case, E alpha plus beta is actually a new generator.
Yes, this new generator has this as the eigenvalue, so it is this state. Right? So if I use actually H, then it shouldn't have all these things. It shouldn't have all this. Those are just normalization. So if I actually act H on the state with the SU2 commutator relationship, I should really get the eigenvalue of this new state is indeed alpha plus beta.
But why this one is independent from E alpha? Because like in your case, you claim that there are eight generators, right?
Uh-huh.
So you already assume that E alpha plus beta is independent from E alpha and E beta.
Uh-huh.
But why is this case?
Why is
it?
No, it's not stupid. Like there could be like interesting questions such as, say I claim I can draw two dots in the middle. And you could be curious and ask, why I kind of draw more than one dots around? It's a curious question. What if, so I pick, at first I pick some guy has alpha as the alpha as my generator to generate my SU2 subalgebra. What if there is another guy has eigenvalue alpha? And why that's not possible? Why we are so sure that all the roots, if they want to degenerate, they all degenerate in the Cartan subalgebra. They are never outside.
Because in that case, you can look at the difference, right? The difference must be Cartan algebra. Like so.
Uh-huh, uh-huh,
yeah. So that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So all of the degeneracy must go.
That's the argument. The argument says, suppose I have E alpha prime, which has still alpha as the eigenvalue, then we know that this guy acting by my lowering operator will definitely bring me back to Cartan subalgebra. So this guy has eigenvalue zero. By the same argument, if alpha acting beta, if the alpha acting beta, you get alpha plus beta, so minus alpha acting alpha, it must be zero. And on the other hand, that this guy is supposed to be this guy. It will be annihilated by this and get back to zero. But we know we're in this SU2 representation, the triplet representation, that has only three states. So on one hand, that it's supposed to have eigenvalue alpha, yeah, let me just check my notes really quick. So the argument goes, that why this guy is unique. Okay, sorry, I'll give you this argument in the notes why that thing is unique.
But the argument should already be correct. Suppose I have A and B, they both have an eigenvalue. So I look at the cumulative.
Yep.
So this one must have zero. If I add from H, because H add from the cumulative, the first one will give you eigenvalue A minus A.
Yep.
Zero.
Mm-hmm.
So it go back to the argument.
Okay. Other questions? Yes.
Like for the diagrams, when you write like one of them test U3 and test O5 and all that, how do you
get
that?
Oh, well, how do you get that is actually you find the generators and you follow the recipe and you find the maximally commuting Hermitian matrices and I call them the Cartan algebra and actually calculate all the other linear combination, go to find E alpha and E beta, and actually draw the diagram. That's exactly what you will precisely do in today's tutorial, is that actually you will expand SU, you know that SU3 is generated by the 8 Gell-Mann matrices, so that's the 8 generators. You will actually find all the commutator, make them mutually commuting. You will find them, two of them can be chosen mutually commuting, thus you determine that they are rank 2. And after you do that, you find the linear combination of the other generators, that is eigenstate, eigenvector of the Cartan algebra. And then you calculate the eigenvalue to literally find this alpha vector and beta vector. So you actually do drawing diagram and you sort of, you know, this is the same number of generator, it's probably corresponding to SU3, but if you really want to know if it's true, you actually want to use the generator to draw the roots diagram, which would happen this afternoon. We actually will find all the roots and we'll draw them on. The roots will literally be a two-dimensional vector xy. So each of these alpha will have an x component, y component, and if you draw, after you find all the roots and you put these dots on the xy plane, they will eventually look like this.
How do you like see it in the diagram?
Oh, okay, that you just count. So each dot, so there are 6 dots on the outside and 2 dots in the middle, so there are 8. 2 dots in the middle because it's a rank 2 algebra, so it should have 2 Cartan generators. And then 6 dots after we figure out these 2 simple roots, and this is the other positive root, and then the negative roots, and there are 6 of them. course.
I have a question. When we derive all the angle between the,
yes.
The roots,
yes.
I think we got it from the SU tool, right? And now when we use the rank tool, and then we
yes.
still use the angle. It's like in SU tool, we have only rank one. And then we arrive at the angle between all the roots. And now
wait, right. So the argument is that alpha, which is the eigenvalue vector, and the beta is the eigenvalue vector. And sure, it is the eigenvalue of that SU2 subalgebra, but since we already say for every Lie algebra, you can always find a SU2 algebra, so it's not a problem, right? For every SU2, for every general Lie algebra, you can always find your SU2. So starting after you find this SU2, then you claim, okay, then all the roots need to form those certain angles with this roots. Because all these states, say these two states, they still furnish a doublet representation of this SU2 you pick. So if you pick this SU2 as your sub Lie algebra, then these two will be forming a doublet, still forming a representation. And so these beta and the gamma are the eigenvalue of them. So it's indeed the eigenvalue of these two dots under this SU2, and according to our conclusion, if that's the case, they should form a certain angle. Sure, we draw our conclusion from SU2, but since every Lie algebra you can find this SU2, then it's not a problem. This process of picking the Catan Lie algebra, finding another pair of generator such that they form a SU2 will always work. Then from this SU2, we can find all the other eigenvalue vectors. Then these vectors should always form certain angles as we derived. You look inconvinced. Try to convince you later. Okay, so I guess this is the end of the class. Since we already accomplished our noble goal of classify all the Lie algebra, so we're done. But there is lots more to learn in this little book that's very concise and at least everything in it, the Georgia's book. Okay, so this is the end of the lecture. I'll see you this afternoon.